Hi, welcome to Female Trouble. I'm Quinn Kelly, and this is a podcast spotlighting women in Baltimore. With a passion for music and the environment, Megan Ducky Dynamo Buster defies the notion of doing or being only one thing. At first managing and promoting artists, Megan eventually started creating music herself as DJ Ducky Dynamo, and can be found bringing the sounds of Baltimore club music across the country. She makes up half of the DJ duo Turnt with Sean Smallwood, and is also an organizer for the Baltimore City Green Party. We talked about her loyalty to Baltimore, weather forecasting, the legacy of DJ K Swift, and connecting art and activism. Here's our conversation. So first of all, I need to know the story behind the name Ducky Dynamo.
Oh, goodness. Okay. Oh, and it's a heartfelt story.
I didn't mean to get into it so deep right off the bat.
Okay. I don't want to be deep off the bat. And I don't want to start with, like, you know, dark and stormy topics, but I will because, you know, this is our community and we have to do that. So my ex-boyfriend is who named me Ducky Dynamo. And the only reason why it's so sentimental is because he passed away earlier this year from a drug overdose. So a lot of the things that I've been doing this year, a couple of them have been, like, about that and for, like, the Narcan training and things like that, because this is the time we live in and this is what happened. So, okay, sad part out the way. Rest in peace, Justin. About 10, 12 years ago now, my ex-boyfriend gave me that nickname Ducky, kind of as like a jab because of the complexion of my skin and like the shape of my body a little bit. There's this whole I walk like a duck thing, and it stuck. And it stuck the way, I guess, you know, like, I guess all childhood nicknames do. But the Dynamo part actually came later, and it was almost like a self-fulfilling prophecy because I became a DJ. It was just a screen name at a point in time, honestly, and I thought it was cute because I like alliteration, and it was like Ducky, okay, I need a cool word that begins with D, okay. And I picked Dynamo, and if you look up the definition of Dynamo, I'm kind of a little bit of a science nerd also. A Dynamo is something that creates energy by spinning. So when I became a DJ decided that's the path I was going to take, it was like, wait, that actually makes perfect sense. Ducky Dynamos, because dynamos spin. Ta-da.
I feel like a common icebreaker is like, what was your first AIM screen name? So yours is like, well, it is just my DJ name now. Or was this not the first?
That was not the first.
Okay.
And to go into the extreme nerdness of me, my first screen name was actually Storm Surge.
Because what is that a reference to?
A storm surge, because I am a mini meteorologist. That's like the other side of my life a little bit. And ever since I was a child, I was just obsessed with the weather, and that's how I got into it. So yeah, I was like 10 or 11 online, like, you know, stuff I like. They're early, what is this, like Windows 95 now. You know, they're suggesting, you know, when you pick a screen name, you know, pick things that you like, pick things, you know, that represent, you know, your home or something. And I'm like, well, I really like weather. Little 10-year-old kid. So I'm like, Storm Surge, yeah, that's awesome.
How do you think you got into weather?
Fear. I still am a little bit, but as a child, I was deathly afraid of thunderstorms. Thunderstorms, bad weather in general, it completely freaked me out. But I had the gift of literacy as a kid. I was able to read when I was like 3 or 4, really early. So I used to kind of just sit around and read my grandmother's encyclopedias, like when she was watching me. So I found the book about weather. And I remember when I was younger, my mother and father kind of taught me one of those things about, like, if you're afraid of something, you're afraid probably because you don't know about it. So go learn about it. And that's kind of what I did. And so the fear turned into kind of like a fascination, more so type of thing. And I just kept learning and learning and learning, and kind of just fell in love with the science and the environment and all that, and stuck to it. And, you know, 20 years later, I'm still so into it and still held on to that. But
so you grew up in Baltimore?
Mm-hmm. Born and raised.
Were you always in Park Heights?
No. Where I live in Park Heights now, that's the house my mother grew up in. It was my grandmother's home. So I spent tons of childhood there. My father's mother lives not too far away, basically on the other side of Pimlico, off of Northern Parkway. So my family was always stuck in that area, more or less. But at the same time, we lived out Randallstown. My parents moved out of Randallstown when I was young. So all my public county school, that's where that's from, in the Randallstown side. But pretty much as soon as I graduated high school and got on my own, I moved right back to that house in Park Heights. So I've been there entirely. My adult life has been very Park Heights. My childhood life was more a mixture of both.
So the family runs very Baltimore deep.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. Go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah. Baltimore through and through. My mother's from South Carolina, but that's about it. You know, they moved up here, and she moved up here when she was 7. And my father's side of family has always been here. So my family is super, super Baltimore. In fact, my grandfather passed away, maybe not last year, year before last. And I ended up learning all of this stuff about him. And I learned that he was actually kind of pretty slick and like a prominent member of kind of what Baltimore has ended up. He was in the first class. He was in the first not integrated class at Poly. Either the last integrated class or the first non-integrated class at Poly. And he ended up being the first black person hired by the state of Maryland, like kind of like period, as a full-time thing. And the full-time thing he was doing was the water pipe system, which made me feel two ways, because the water situation here in Baltimore is not the greatest. But what I came to find out was that actually might be in part of him on both sides, because he was one of the early developers of the water pipe system that we use. However, time went on, he retired, and the state of Maryland apparently ended up creating a consultant position specifically to get him to come back and try to help and fix the things that, you know, started to crumble when the infrastructure started to. So he did that off and on too. And I was like, whoa, my granddad's responsible for the fuck, don't put it here. Oops. You know, but also maybe awesome, you know, but yeah.
So you didn't know that about him for most of your life?
I had no clue. And it was one of those things that kind of, my grandmother, my grandfather and I weren't particularly close or anything. I knew him, you know, but my family isn't like that, in which, oh, we see all of the family members all the time. So I'd see him like maybe every couple of years or, you know, something like that. And I graduated from Towson in 2013 with a geography major, degree, a meteorology minor, GIS minor. But I did so much work in, you know, geography and the mapping and all that. And then I come to find out he passed on, and that's like what he did with his life. I had no clue about any of that. And I was like, oh my gosh, if I had known that this is what he actually did while I was in undergrad, that would have been not only particularly useful, but just interesting, because he had then a perspective of this city on a level that I only studied, that most people definitely don't at all have, because they're not involved with the infrastructure, especially not something so deep as what the water system is. It goes under everything. And I'm a little bit of a Baltimore historian, and that was always particularly interesting to me because of all of the tunnels, like the stuff of Lexington
Market.
That's
what I thought of the Lexington Market one.
There's tons of corridors under Baltimore, not even just there, in many different places there's actually stuff in them. And I was like, he probably knew about a lot of that, or at least something of it, because you'd have to. That's where all the water pipes run through as well. So it was just one of those, man, learn your family while you can, even if you don't like them. It's just like, you never know like what kind of stories. And it's funny, people on that side of family were telling me that it was interesting that I ended up having that interest, because that is what he did. And it was like, well, certain stuff, I guess, is just, you know, in the family line innately some kind of way. So I regretted not being able to, you know, especially in my adult life, be able to talk to him more, you know, and talk to him just, you know, about stuff I was doing and letting him know and see what he was. Because, and my father, it was my father's father. I told him that. He was like, oh, yeah, I forgot he did that. Man, I'm like, no, Dad. Like, this is a serious, like, why didn't you, you
it's
know.
It's not like as that. Cool when it's, like, your own dad, I guess. You know, I feel like it's probably more interesting to generations down the line than if you're closer to
it's
it.
It's a little bit more removed, so it's a little more of a lure to it, you know, but. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Times are strange.
So was there ever a question of you leaving Baltimore, or have you always wanted to stay here?
A little bit of both. I love Baltimore probably too much, and that's probably why I'm still here. But I've always had, like, for whatever reason, a deep, deep love of this city. And a lot of that I attributed to the fact that, like most Baltimoreans, I haven't gone anywhere. But I actually got to go somewhere. So when I was in undergrad in 2012, I studied abroad in Brazil for a little bit. And so I lived there, and it is everything you think it would be living in Brazil. It's the most beautiful place. Everything's, you know, it is what it is. But while I was there, part of the program that I was in, it was more of a community-based thing as well. So half the time we were there was a language, it was a language trip. So we did do the immersive language thing, so I could speak Portuguese for like 2 months because I had no choice. And I could. I've forgotten a lot of it, but I could. But the other side is we were working in the favelas. There was a community center there, and we would go there a couple of days out of the week and work with the children and help them, you know, just help them exist. And growing up in Baltimore is not easy. It's not pleasant. It's not cute. It's poor. There's crime everywhere. People die every day, like in front of your house, you know. So in Park Heights, that is the area that I live in. So we're all so used to, and in many ways, like, what's the word I'm looking
desensitized?
For?
Desensitized.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Desensitized from a lot of these awful things, and we just kind of walk around it. But to go to another country and basically see what their version of bad is, and note how what was wild to me about that trip was seeing how this is supposed to be a place, like they describe it as if like it's a third world country, and that area we were in kind of like there wasn't running water in this neighborhood, you know, so the sewage runoff was like whack, and everyone had to walk everywhere, and you would definitely probably get stabbed if you were outside at certain times. So we had like bouncers, so to speak, walking as poor Americans, you know, through this, because we were definitely noticeably American and all, you know, all this. And they painted this picture and it was terrible, but in many ways I was very home. I was kind of like, okay, like they're giving cautionary advisories to the other girl. It was all girl group, not intentionally, but that's kind of, you know, just how it ended up. But you had, you know, a couple girls from like Seattle. Most of them, it was a Towson trip. So half of them went to Towson. The other ones were from a part in like Oakland and random stuff. But they were very, oh, be careful, it's dangerous here, da, da, da. And I'm kind of just like,
They've done that.
Yeah, I'm like, yeah. This isn't strange to me. The only thing that's strange about it is that there's a beautiful beach here. That's the difference. It's just that you live on in paradise, but this is still, you know, your life. So that trip was kind of wild to me because it kind of put in perspective not only the status of here to other places, how home this still is. Because even when we went to the nicer places, I always was like, I kind of just want to come back home no matter what. So since then, post that part of my life, like I said, that was what, 5 years ago. After that is when, you know, once I graduated and went through the phase of, you know, you graduate, you have no clue what to do because now you're an adult and nothing worked out the way you thought it was going to.
Yep, checks out.
Like, okay, no, I'm gonna get a job. Psych, I'm gonna do this. Psych, I have a degree. I'm in debt. Yes. All right. That's the only thing. That's
the universal experience.
Yes. A few years after that, so a few years ago, in 2014, that's when I began to become the full-time artist, musician, that side of the world type thing. And that has blessed me with the opportunity to go so many places that I've never been. Like when the trip in Brazil I just mentioned, I was 24, and that was in 2012, and that was the first time I was ever on a plane. It was the first time I ever left the country. It's the first time I've been too far out the region, because before that I had only, you know, like been on maybe bus trips for a day, stuff like that. So that's why the first question you asked, was I going to stay here or wasn't anything like that? I wasn't anywhere, but I never had the chance to go anywhere. I never had the opportunity. So this is all I knew. Baltimore is one outside of, you know, just what I was able to research. So once kind of that happened, even when traveling this, I've been, even in the first couple of months, I was at South By in Texas. You know, South by Southwest in Texas. And after that, every couple of months, there's shows in New York, there's shows in Philly. I've been down to Atlanta. I've been in Dallas. I was in Canada. And this all started happening really fast. So really quickly, I was able to actually see and live what these other places are as an adult. And then as, you know, the artist entity that I am. And it's kind of like, okay, I've learned how and understand how I can, you know, function in these other places the same way, but it's still nothing like here. It's still nothing like here. So at this point in time, I love traveling. I figured that out as soon as I did. I'm a geography major, I was, you know, so I was always a let's see other places anyway. And I'd love to, but there's still something just very here that I have not seen anywhere else. And it will probably always bring me back. I probably will go, especially this coming up year, end up living somewhere else. I love Philly. I fake love New York. I do like Atlanta. You know, it's like, so there are places that are feasible and decent to go, and I probably would, but I can't see me leaving Baltimore forever on purpose, even with everything that goes on here, because it's like, this is home, and I have little sisters. They're 18 and 19. So I'm like, well, I can't leave them in new adulthood in this, you know, in this foolery without,
yeah, they
without
need their
me.
Guide.
Yeah, be like, hold up, wait, you know, like, you know, check this out, you know, make sure you do this. But I don't know, I have like a weird responsibility type of feeling now about here, because it's terrible, but it has given me everything that I literally am, that other people like to see and spend money on. So it's like, how could I betray this? How could I not, you know, try to stay here as long as possible?
Well, I feel like that's pretty late to kind of like come into your own in an artistic way. And so, I mean, was music always part of your life? And how did you just go from like, you know, geography major to now I'm traveling the country as a DJ?
Okay, yes. all right, let me backtrack. ever so slightly. It is the story then of Ducky Dynamo and how I came to be. Yes, I've always loved music forever and ever and ever and ever. I'm one of those, I was a DJ before I knew I was a DJ, because ever since I could, I've been making playlists. And ever since I could, I've been burning CDs, because the Napster thing was real slick back in 1999. Yes. And I was in seventh grade trapping out mix CDs because I knew how to do it.
I think that's like the peak mix CD year, seventh grade. Most of mine are probably from then too.
You know what? It's probably like the puberty thing. I blame it a lot on that, because you first like, oh, I think I like this guy.
And you're like begging for him to make you a mix CD.
Or then you're me and you just do it. I'll do it. You know, they're like, the fuck, you know. But that might have been it. So I've always had just a grand appreciation of music. I played instruments ever since I was a kid. My father taught me clarinet. When I got into school and did that thing, I played violin and viola. And kind of kept that going a little bit, but not really. Fell off in high school, and then when I graduated high school, I bought a bass. So I play bass, guitar, and I self-taught myself that. But what really did it, and what really kind of pushed me into the DJing, really was more so the nightlife. That is kind of what happened first, because back in 2006, I joined so many promotion and street teams. They were first on the rock music side. So I was promoting for like All Time Low and Dropout Year and going to record
All
theater.
Time Low, like the hometown pop punk heroes,
The very same, the very, very same. So I was at like a lot of those shows, and I was just turned 18, you know, like brand new outside, like, oh, you know, oh my God, seeing stuff. And I fell in love with that. Of course. And I always had this weird, well, I can't play music, so I'll be involved in every other way type of thing. So that is why I was big on promotion. That's why how I learned to promote. I then ended up becoming interested in kind of like management and how to move these artists around, because I would see them do these whole concerts. A friend of mine was in Dropout Year. So that's actually what helped, you know, come to my show. Okay, you know, somebody I went to high school with was the drummer as well, you know. So it was a familiar thing. So I'd be hanging out when it was time for them to leave, and I'd watch them do all this work and sit on MySpace, because that's where we were, you know, back then, and do the promotion and the flyers and the, you know, things like that. And then see them work hard, see them put on the show, play their set, see them stick around, and watch them get handed like $20 at the end of the night, and then watch them be happy about it. And I was sitting there like, how does this work? And how are you doing this? And how, you know, you guys really are kind of just doing this because you, like, it obviously isn't for the money, because you now have to spend, what, you're splitting $20 between five guys. What? And like, that's your work for the night, you know. And it's like, well, no, we make money off of selling this. Then I see the T-shirts and the TV, you know, and the CDs and stuff. And it's like merch. I began to learn basically the business. And I was like, this is incredible. At the same time, being the young Baltimorean that I am, I also have a grand obsession with Baltimore club music, and have grown up listening to nothing but that my entire life. So that also was where I was going the rest of the time. I was going to, the docks is like, up until it's closer, like my second home for a period of time, because without fail, every Friday night you would find me in there week after week after week from 12 to 5, because that is what we did. That was, you know, that was our life. So while I'm beginning to learn how to party there.
Learn how to party. Yes, I like learn, that.
No,
yeah.
Seriously. It's because true. I've told a lot of colleges that I swear you guys need to implement a how-to nightlife situation for the freshmen, because everyone's going to do it, and very few people actually truly know like how to responsibly do this, though, especially within your own city, especially if you live in like an irky city like Baltimore, where it might be dangerous for you, out-of-towner from like Wisconsin, and you're 18 and you don't really know anyone but your roommates, but you're on York Road about to go party in Baltimore.
Yeah.
It's like there's just certain things about being able to go out, especially as a really young adult for the first time. Like, not to sound like preachy and weird about it, because I'm definitely not, but it's like, no, you do have to spend some time learning how to be that, if you're about that. Some people don't care at all.
And it's kind of like the classic thing all girls learn, like watch your drink. It's no, things yeah, like that. Some, yeah. yeah,
like just typical how to take care of yourself. You know, don't go in the club with like this size bag for no reason. You know, just simple stuff that you unfortunately for some reason don't learn until you learn the lesson.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like you might not want to be the lesson. And if there was somebody there to be like, hey, why don't you know this before? It wouldn't. But I digress. So from that, I ended up doing a similar thing. my friends and I ended up putting on and creating a party promotion company, and where we ended up throwing our own parties and promoting for other, you know, things around. So we kind of made our lane and got involved in that side of the nightlife scene on our own. And I frequented like all of the clubs. I was in Sonar at Tax Low parties all the time. I was at Iguana Cantina all the time, and that would be that. And then we'd go straight to the docks at night. Hammer Jacks was still open in that format. And it is when Baltimore nightlife was what it was. It isn't the same anymore, because we've, for a number of reasons. But back then, there was always so much to do. So I was watching the club music-y, club scene side. At the same time, I'm watching kind of like the Baltimore punk side. And I pretty much decided then that this is just kind of just what I'm into. I was like, I love the art that comes out of Baltimore. It astonished me. And I saw back then, you know, how lucrative it could be. But even that, just the communities around it and what it meant to the city. And like, you know, on like a cultural level, on all sides, because this is all genres of music we're talking about. I'm not even just talking about hip hop and club. Again, like I said, it's rock and all of that between pop punk and then down to metal. Like the spectrum for all of the music is there. So starting then, I started to be a prominent, I guess, not prominent, prominent to me, maybe not to the world at large, you know, but focusing on the scene and what it meant, period, and kind of being entrenched in that. And I ended up being the one who would tell people what to do. You know, everybody that I knew would know to come and ask me, you know, what's going on. Like, oh yeah, my girlfriend's in town, what should we do this weekend? Oh, okay, well, this club has this going on, this place has this show going on, you know. And that kind of like grew into kind of like just who I am. The third final caveat of that is that I started working for CBS Radio, also doing promotions, but I was in a radio studio every day. So it was like, okay, this is definitely what I want to do when I grow up. How do I figure this out? You know, so I began to learn the inside of the radio over there. I worked for Jack FM and Light FM. And I occasionally did things for The Fan and Mix, you know, 106.5. But that's where, you know, my chunk was. So going to all the events and seeing that, seeing how things work in the studio. It was a lot of things at one time that I was able to touch around 18 and 19. And I stuck with that. Fast forward, I kept doing that for years. Around 2008, and this is largely related to DJ K Swift's passing, we all kind of took a break. Things slowed down a whole lot, you know, for a number of reasons. But like I said, that part of that was a big one. At the time of her passing, I was on her promotional team. So it was funny. I kind of like just started promoting for her. So I was like, she was like, you know, the queen to us. Mm-hmm. It's K-Swift, so we're like, but I was very, very, still very young and very, you know, so it was, that whole situation was a little bit rough for me because I kind of just gotten to know her, sort of, not really, but she knew my name. Mm-hmm. She knew that my birthday was 2 days before hers. You know, I was like, she knew that I existed and was like that. And then, you know, she passed away. And then everything kind of stopped for, you know, a number of us. After that, I wasn't as outside doing things as much, partially because that's when I went to school at Towson. So while I was there, I was only a patron. You know, I went to PowerPoint and I went to school and I went to work. And, you know, like maybe that was it. But as I mentioned, once I graduated, it was like, OK, what's going on? I remember when I graduated, I went back outside and I was looking for a party. And I was looking for a party that reminded me of all the ones that I used to go to that had everyone in it, you know, that was fun and loud and bassy. And it was club music and it was this. And I couldn't find it. And I'm like, I don't know where any of this is. The clubs that I used to go to, half of them are closed. There's only a couple left at this point in time. And going there wasn't the same as it used to be. There's all these new places and they don't want me in there, you know. And it became uncomfortable. And eventually, I happened across my now musical partner and agent and everything else, whatever that ended up, Sean Smallwood. He is the best DJ I've ever seen in my life around here in a couple of ways. And when I saw him playing, I immediately was like, what is that? Who is this person? And why the hell is he DJing like this? Because this is exactly what I'm talking about. What is this? And I like stalked him on the internet a little bit and it finally fit, got, you know, able to talk to him, and he just, you know, kind of explained who he was, and he was like, yeah, you know, I'm DJing a couple years, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, no, you're great. He's like, yeah, I know, you know, you know. And it's like, we talked and we shared kind of our views on the Baltimore club scene, period, and everything that was going on. And I was telling him about how I kind of wanted to rebuild you know, what I saw before. I'm like, molded now. I know what's going on. Like, I want to, if it doesn't exist here, I want to create it. I want to bring back what the nightlife used to be here, because it did actually used to be an amazing thing. And I know it's still here somewhere. And he's like, okay, you know, well, let's work. And I was like, you're pretty awesome. I want you to teach me how to DJ. And he said, okay, you're pretty awesome. I want you to be my manager. And I said, trade, deal. And then the rest is history. So for the, that was about in, yeah, that was in 2014 when that happened. And in helping him as an artist, basically become an artist, become him, become the DJ package that he is and the product that he is, and move him around and, you know, work with the people we work with, like, you know, Black Star and the other artists around here, and cultivate that. I then was learning how to DJ, because I was literally at every show. I was literally in every practice, you know, and I ended up being cool. And he's like, hey, you got it too. Let's go. And then the following year is when I guess it's 2 years ago now, I actually started DJing officially as a thing, and not just in my living room for fun for people, you know, who were there. And now here we are, and still, I guess, you know, on the upward journey, because things happen quick, you know. And next thing I knew, I was getting invited, like I said, to Canada to play on their music festival to represent music from here. And I'm like, right, because that's the point. That's my kind of point as a DJ, to be the Baltimore thing that used to happen, but still be as slick as today and whatever else needs. And make sure that everyone remembers, though, that this is Baltimore and this is where this came from.
It's wild, because still, like, so many Baltimore musicians you will talk to today, like, they describe the exact same experience as you. Like, we all know, like, K-Swift's passing was such a big deal, but people will tell you that it isn't really until now, you know, in the past couple of years, that, like, that hole has even started to be filled. And no one's saying that they're filling her shoes, but, you know, to even, like, come back. And it's just kind of, like, mind-boggling to think about one person's outside influence in that way, and how a whole community could feel like this thing is gone, you know, when one person passes away.
Yeah, like, it's funny, this week I was just reading Al Shipley's interview that he did in the City Paper. Then, it was a couple weeks after she had passed. City Paper did an interview with basically who was Club Queen Entertainment, and that was, you know, K-Swift's company. And it was really weird to look back and read now, because, so what was that, 7 years ago in 2008? The people who were all listed in that were people who still even then were like stars to me. They were like, you know, it's Pork Chop on the radio, you know, it's Say What. And my DJ Say What, he's big and flashy a little bit, like he is. So much so that it was a super big deal to us, because myself and my friends I mentioned who had our company, for the very first event that we did, we hired him to be our DJ. So we were, it was like this whole, you know, so. And even who else was in the interview? Buck Jones was in there. And he was a, you know, a big party host at the time. All of these people who were in that interview, Mike Mumbles was mentioned, DJ Big Nasty was mentioned. These are all people who like created me. And so reading it then, I mean, no, reading it and remembering what it was then and remembering kind of like how I felt is kind of like just the kid around there. And all of these people, they're mentors to me, or, you know, they're people who were my bosses. They're people I listened to. And again, people I was definitely like scared around, because it's like, they're definitely the real deal. All of these people I can like text right now, like, what you doing? Let's go get a drink. All these people are now people who they're my peers. And not only are some of them my peers, like I said, some of them are somewhat responsible for me, you know, as the talent I was. DJ Big Nasty, I used to kind of be like his shadow, so to speak. You know, I guess similar to what I did, you know, with Sean, I'd make sure that, like, he got to his gigs and made sure, you know, he had stuff, made sure he got paid at the end of the night, you know, like stuff like that. And so to see now what that impact was then, and then now to understand that I am now in the same seat as these people are. And I was recently told, you know, it's like, well, no, just like I was 18 and 19 looking at them with starry eyes, they're now the same 18 and 19 year old brats that come into my parties and look at me like, oh, the ducky. And I'm just like, whatever, yo. And they're like, it's the same way, it's the same thing. That type of thing is that feeling, and that reality is kind of why I think so much of us stick to this, and so much of us have that, you know, I'm trying to keep that in pursuit. And even like you said, in a little late for you to be figuring out you want to be a DJ. Yeah, but
I didn't say it quite that, but you know what I mean.
No, yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, I'm that's just really teasing, what it is. No, but I heard, girl, I've heard that. You know? It's like, I have family. I have parents. Like, then, you know, they're all like, I dig you, you know, because you've done what you've done. My resume is nothing to sneeze at. But it's just that, well, you found what you want to do, so go for it and just look at it. So why not? But it is, there have been a lot of, you know, people like, well, why? It's exhausting for one thing. Like, do you even, you know, like, feel like that? And I'm like, yes, because it is bigger than just the party. Like you said, you talk to, you know, a number of musicians and people from here who all bring up that thing and say kind of the same thing. That was one lady who died 7 years ago, you know, and you can end it there. But it's like, no, if you look, this is far more than just one lady who, you know, died a couple years ago in a spooky way. The impact that she had on so many other people who then ended up being impactful to so many other people. And it's like, no, that era literally raised a generation of this city. And I'm really, really, really big on cities and their own cultures. And if you were to write a story of Baltimore culture, especially Black Baltimore culture, it would be impossible to evade her in the story. There'd be no way to, and not even just Kay Swift, period. Everybody involved in life, you couldn't tell any type of story about Baltimore without telling a story about the docks, or about Choices, or about Hammer Jacks, or about 92Q, or Back of V103, you know, Frank Ski, Odell, like everything. It's almost impossible to tell the story about what Baltimore culture is without mentioning these things. Other cities don't have, not all cities have that sort of relationship with what became their nightlife scene or their local music scene as much at all. And that's part of what, in my opinion, makes Baltimore special. Because, and why I do, you know, kind of fight so hard for the artists here, and ended up so much so I ended up one myself. Like I said, in the first, I was very big on being behind the scenes. I was very big on, let me just, you know, promote this show for you. Let me do your PR. Let me do your marketing. Let me, you know, send the emails for you. Let me, you know, talk to the venues for you. That was what I was cool with. That's what I'm good at. But I got sucked in too. And it was like, no, wait, I see it. I get it. You know, and I can do it. And I have the knowledge to. And that's why, like I said, it's when I look at DJing here, I see it as kind of like almost like an evangelistic thing. You know, it's like, no, I'm going to these places and I am telling you the history of these people. I am playing this music so you understand where this came from, because there is so much of our music in music in general that people don't understand and realize came from here. You know, I just got in an argument on Twitter a couple weeks ago because I said something about I said that Atlanta wouldn't be Atlanta without Baltimore. People from Baltimore understood that, especially people over a certain age from Baltimore understood that. Because, again, Frank Ski, Kevin Lyles, you know, all these things that ended up going down there. Atlanta people, though, were not, of course, not pleased.
Of
you
course,
know,
there's always that pride.
Yeah, it's like, oh, you wild, blah, blah, Baltimore's just this. And I'm like, hey, no disrespect, I'm not saying enough. I'm like, but there's a reason why they call Atlanta, like, Baltimore, too. When I went down there, like, the first time I had ever been to Atlanta in my life, that was last April, May, something like that. We went down there, we were walking around in, I think it was East Atlanta, around the venue that we were playing at, and we ran into people who knew us. I have never been in Atlanta a day in my life, but when I tell you that when we were walking around, because we, you know, walk around just to scope out the area, promote the show, you know, talk to people, see what's around. When I tell you I ran into people, you'd have thought that I was at the harbor, you know, or you'd have thought that I was just, you know, just outside on a normal day, like at the mall or something. Just, oh, hey, what's up, such and such. I'm all the way down there, and I'm running into people that I know. They did not know I would be there. You know, I didn't know I'd be there. It wasn't like I'm coming to find you. And I found people I didn't know, but from the school I went to, there was a girl down there, and she went to Towson and graduated the same class as me, and was just like, oh, shit, you're here too. Wow, coincidence. And I'm like, this is weird. You know, it's like, I can grasp being popular. Sure, I can grasp knowing a lot of people. But I'm like, no, Atlanta is very different. There is so much of here down there. And that's what I was trying to explain. I'm like, I'm not taking anything away from that. But it's like, you all do not understand the influence that things specifically from this city and products specifically from this city that went to Atlanta on purpose.
I went to Atlanta for the first time this year, also in May. And it surprised me because every single person we met was a transplant. No one was from there originally. Right. And a lot of them would say, like, you know, I came from either a small town or a city where I didn't really find my scene, and I came here for the music, I came here for the culture. So I really think it is a lot of transplants there mm-hmm. who are drawn to the culture. And that's probably true about Baltimore to an extent, too.
There is a lot of that. And that's something that I guess it's like kind of we like wrestle with that a little bit within the communities, because there becomes a difference between if you are actually from this city and actually really from this city and have an appreciation for what the city is and does and contributes to it versus those who weren't. Now, I'm not going to be so, you know, so sharp to say that everyone who's not from here is the enemy. That's not what it is. But when it comes down to certain it just mentalities, I think it's one of the things that Baltimore has been hurt from, because it's a very usable city. You can kind of equate it to it. I don't want to say stuff that's too extreme about it, but what happens is this: you know, you do have this culture rich environment, and we know the wealth of Baltimore, and if you don't, I apologize. But in simple stuff, you between the music, even Artscape, my favorite thing to throw at people is, remember, Artscape is the biggest free arts festival in the entire freaking country, like for decades, you know. So Baltimore is extremely special and has all time. We make Olympians, you know, like this is amazing little dirty crime riddled structurally strained city, but there's all this greatness here, and you do have people who come. You have people who come here from that, and a lot of this, it starts with college, you know, because we have wonderful schools here. You have MICA, you know, you have Johns Hopkins, you have Towson, go Tigers, you know, you have Morgan, excellent, go Bears, I guess. You know,
but, I guess.
But but you have Coppin, you know, we have these good schools here, Loyola in the middle. And kind of there is kind of a school for everyone here. And you have people who come and they go to school and they fall in love with the city because it is Charm City. Still, people love it here. And then they graduate and they go home, or they get married and they go home, you know, or they just,
or to the suburbs.
Yeah, right. Or they're mm-hmm. they're out the county now, or, you know, anything, or maybe just the reality gets too much for them sometime, because there are people overdosing on your doorstep every day if you live around, you know, like Station North. There are people getting shot literally in your backyard if you live in Park Heights like me, and that can get wearing on people, again, especially if you did not grow up in that. So you have people who come and they stay and they love it, but then they leave. And then what? And I think that part of the issues that Baltimore has experienced, especially within the art community, is just that people leave, you know. So you have this temporary but fiery and rich passion, you know, for it. And you have people who will go hard for it, and they'll curate shows, and they'll, you know, draw attention and do this and do stuff, and then they graduate. So see ya. And then the pieces are left.
It's like this 4-year turnover,
exactly.
Every single time.
And I've seen it. I've seen it now. And these are varying areas. And then it doesn't help that on top of that, I do mean the artist community, kind of seem to have to go back and forth all the time with the city about even just being allowed to be an artist in whatever capacity, you know. And again, I'm a DJ, so I'll keep taking it there. And the nightlife scene, we have lost, like all of the venues that we've had over the past 3 years, there's almost nothing left. And you have places that have closed for various, you know, varying reasons, but the point is that it's closed. So on top of the transient nature of the fans and the transient nature of the support, because those with resources and money are those who aren't from here. So that's why we have to embrace it, because it's like, oh, good, you're bringing us resources, you're bringing us help, yay. But then you graduate in 5 years, and then you're gone, and I'm still here. And I'm still poor, and I'm still from Baltimore, you know, so I'm still like, okay. But things change around us. And I think that on one end, it's cool, because it's like being the river bend, in which if you watch a river, at the river bend, you'll find things, because that's where things wash up. So you have the stuff that's washed down from the river, you know, you'll find your gold, you'll find your sediments, and it's really easy to pan them there. That's kind of what that's like. People will go, but the water still keeps moving. So you have some things that are left behind. Not all of them are good, but many of them can be, and we embrace that. But then you leave and you go, and it kind of all starts over again. And it starts over then on a rocky platform, because at the same time, we're literally battling for the ability to be the artist that we want to be in the first place. So it leaves a lot of room for inauthenticity and that's not necessarily the greatest thing if you're talking about trying to preserve a culture, you know, because then you have pieces who wish to be a part of that timeline who may not align with that. And then you have people who are totally into it because that's what it is right now, but not back to then what this does mean to the culture and then the city at large. Because like I said, this is a generational thing. We have, you know, people literally who grew up, you know, in this, and it means that much to them, not just a fun Friday night. Like, no, this is actually, like, this is what we do as a people. You know, this is, like, our people cultural product to the world. So this isn't just something that's, you know, fun for your little turn up in undergrad, you know. So it's negotiating that and kind of seeing how that, and the messed up thing about that on a judgment level, which is why I can say I'm trying not to use certain words or, you know, paint certain types of things, is as a growing artist, again, going back to, like, you know, the young freshmen who came here in college and they come and fall in love and they are a student, they do want to be a part, that might be a real genuine thing for them. They won't know until they turn 25 and are done, if they're really actually done, because many of them have elected to stay here. You know, many of them have been like, oh, nah, this is it. I do want to help this. I do want to, you know, heal this and fix this thing and keep it going. So they do stay and they're not too, you know, picky from it. But a lot of times, a lot of it kind of just ends up getting outsourced and passed. Mm-hmm. And the rest of us are standing here like, well, this was real to us and it still is. So we have to keep going. But look at the people passing through. Like, it's weird.
You have combined, like, your interest in and your background in the environment with your music and your art in a really interesting and unexpected way. And I was hoping you could kind of talk more about how those intersect for you.
Yeah, no, that's excellent, man. How do I explain that? Well, I'm a DJ. And so when what DJs do is they take one song and they mix another song. And that's kind of, not to sound corny, God, that sounds ungodly corny, but that's sort of like my philosophy on life and how I do stuff. Because I do have a number of different interests, and it might be a selfish thing, it might be some kind of strange God complex, but I have this belief that you can do all of the things you actually want to do. You can. There is no such thing as I'm this, so I can't be that. You know, you can figure it out. If you enjoy it enough and you're passionate enough about it, you can definitely figure out how to merge all of these things together. So really, if I've learned how to merge that, because I think it comes really from the position of being in front of people. So about the weather and environment thing, one of the things that I guess I left out. I used to co-own a weather company here called Foots Forecast. We were super lit for a little bit. We were touted with being the first and only group of forecasters to actually accurately nail the Snowmageddon, the first one.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's quite a weather claim to fame.
Oh, yeah. No,
I would imagine.
Like,
I don't know what, like, the accolades are in the weather world, but listen, that seems like it's akin here at The Sun to, like, breaking a story or,
yes,
like, getting a big scoop.
It was a big deal. And the thing about Foots Forecast, I'll have to take credit for, like, right after the first Snowmageddon. But the interesting thing about this company was it is all student run. Mr. Foote was a teacher out of Dundalk, and he had, you know, a group of kids that were interested in the weather, and he was a science teacher. So he was like, all right, I got it. You know, we'll put it together for you. And he formed this group of junior forecasters. They were, like I said, they were all high school kids, and they would get together just out of the love of it, you know, of forecasting. And they ended up creating a blog and ended up on Facebook and getting tons of followers and people who would follow their really accurate forecasts, and everyone was super blown and super impressed by it, because these are just kids, they're 15 and 16 year olds, you know, from Baltimore at that, huh? And but you're smart enough to do this. Again, being interested in weather, I happened across them and will watch them periodically. And long story short, they were excellent. I was interested. I worked at Mount St. Joseph High School for a good chunk of my taxable life. And one time, the science teacher got Mr. Foote to come and talk as a speaker to one of the classrooms and told me, and I was like, oh shit, I'm definitely on there. And I went and I met him, and we, you know, talked to each other. He's like, go ahead and apply. And I ended up applying. And by this time, it wasn't just high schoolers anymore. It was branched out to all students, basically, who were interested in, you know, could handle it. And I never, ever, like I mentioned earlier, I've loved weather forever. And anybody who knows me as a person knows this, because I never let it go. So my entire life, I was always the one like, hey, y'all, the weather, though, you know, and being ultra informative about things. And when hurricanes would come and snowstorms, and much like I was the person that people would ask me, hey, what is there to do this weekend? I was also the, yo, what's up with this hurricane allegedly coming, you know, person. And a big thing for me was the third, I think it's the third at this point, I don't know, this is the third or fourth shade of Ducky, is the little politician in me. Because I was also, and still am, as I am now an organizer for the Baltimore City Green Party, was interested in politics and local politics. And I have a really, really, really big issue. One of my biggest, biggest issues is what we have now come to term environmental racism. And in Baltimore, what with, you know, what it is, that's a huge story here, especially with, you know, like the lead pipe situations and so much stuff. That's, we're not talking about all of all of that at this time. So I ended up adopting, all that to say, I ended up adopting this this mouthpiece in talking point, like I mentioned earlier, about an informational thing, basically, always keeping people aware of what was going on with the weather. When I joined Foots Forecast, this is kind of what made me the Foots Forecast thing. Very shortly after growing, you know, being a part of that and a forecaster, they appointed me first to be what essentially ended up PR and social media marketing for this company. At the time, we had forecasters in like 20 different states, two other different countries. Here, the Central Maryland group was, of course, the biggest one because it was the flagship one. There was like 62,000 followers on Facebook at the time then. You know, so I ended up adopting and carrying all of that. They created, you know, the Facebook versions and the initial website version. But when I got on, they appointed me kind of to be the head of that for the country. So I ended up doing social media for that on the big level, along with forecasting. And then they ended up pointing me to Maryland team leader, period. So I had to fuss at all of the little forecasters. You know, I was just kind of like the boss of all of them. But from then, I guess, learned the speaking voice and how to inform. This became extremely useful and kind of comes from the fact that I was a promoter. So like I joke up to people, I'm kind of good. I'm good at many things. Probably the best thing I'm doing is telling you where to go and when. Like, go here for this thing, because it's there. And all of it kind of merged together because it's just the getting the information to people in the way they know how to receive it. I brought up the environmental racism thing and stuff like that because what I discovered is that there is a huge, huge illiteracy when it comes to the weather and things like that, period. But especially within our Black communities. A lot of times we're the last to know about a lot of situations. And when there are, you know, general just weather type of emergencies, right? Like that information doesn't necessarily get to them or it's not as greatly understood. So I was the one like, nah, I can explain it to you like this. And they're like, oh, okay, cool, I get it. What I developed an understanding for is that when it comes to getting important information to people, if you need to, kind of the best thing to do is just to appeal to who they are. And so what I realize is it's where the art and activism thing came from. Perhaps we can blame this strong lilt on the uprising, because that is when a lot of the voice on that end happened, because I was talking to a lot of people, making them very well aware of the circumstances we were in. And no, this is what curfew means. And no, this is what this, you know, and just this is where you go. People were confused. People didn't know how to pick up their kids. You know, like the day they shut the, what was it? The subway down in Mondawmin. I live like maybe 5 to 7 minutes from there. You know, so it was like, this is all stuff that is happening. And what I realized was not only, okay, again, I don't want to sound weird and corny because it is corny, but it's so fitting and it's cute. So I'll go with it. People look to the DJ for many things. If you're in a party, there is no party without the DJ. No matter what, you can have your host, you can have your promoter, you can have the bartenders, you can have everything. But if the DJ is not doing the DJ thing, there is literally nothing going on. So people kind of have this respect for when they're being respectful for a DJ, and know kind of to trust certain stuff. What I figured out very quickly, that whole long story short, is that I can use my voice and I can use my reach and the way people look at me anyway for whatever they're looking at me for to actually give and preach and press good information and knowledge and make it understanding and decent. One of the best ways I can probably sum this up is a couple months ago, I won a grant from MICA. It was during the time of the People's Climate March. The People Climate March went out and approached a number of different schools. I think they were all primarily art schools, though, to basically give them a bunch of money, to give their students a bunch of money to do art things to raise awareness for the People's Climate March and that action and everything about that. And I put in a proposal and I ended up winning one. So they gave me some grant money to put on an event. And the event I put on one was essentially a showcase. I showcased artists from the area who had music that was relating to, you know, not even just music, because I did have a couple of performers, but we had poets, we had painters, the other grantee winners, there was like a puppeteer, you know, all kinds of different stuff. Photographer Shan Wallace, she was one of the photographers with her, and I love her to death. So she was a part of it. And I ended up, I was essentially putting on a showcase about things in art that was related to environmental justice or the environment in general. And I remember the artists were all confused. I'm like, do y'all have any music about the weather? They're like, what? No. I'm like, okay.
I'm like okay. The Itsy Bitsy Spider. Yeah, that's what right. comes to mind.
It's like,
yeah.
Does anything, rain showers, torn, you know, nothing. But, you know, and I started to discuss.
Umbrella, I guess. That's probably.
There you go.
Okay, now I'm just
listen,
on a,
the
on
Spotify
a
playlist.
Here. Yeah.
We'll put that together. But there was, you know, just things about what it could mean for you coming out of environments that are environmentally, you know, screwed up, you know, for instance, again, especially upon like the themes you'd see in Baltimore as far as like, you know, the water and the blight and and things like that, if you understand it. And I was like, even if you don't really understand what I'm getting at by this, if it's something thematically based, trust me, we'll work with it. And so I put on this showcase essentially to do that and invited a bunch of people. And within that, we had moments where we would touch on these issues, you know, like, okay, so this is what this means. This is what that means. And had, you know, publications. And it essentially was I can throw a party and trap you into learning something. Because at the end of the day, this is all kind of the same thing. And for me, at the end of the day, it all stems from the same, I guess, you know, like passion. Like I said, I'm very pro Baltimore. I'm very pro our Baltimore and keeping, you know, us here and safe and all of that. And all of the things that I do and all of the things I'm interested in are directly related to that. So it's like, to me, it doesn't really seem too different for me to switch up and, you know, talk about weird weather stuff at the same time I'm talking about a great club lore story, you know, or, you know, a great producer story or a great band story, because it's still all about here, you know, and it's the service to let me just make these people happy and keep these people informed. It goes hand in hand at that point, you know, so it's the merger of it is it's almost second nature to me. You know, like I said, just like DJ, play the next song. It has nothing to do with the last song. And it could be, you know, a completely different thing, but it still goes, it still flows, and people never stop listening to it. So it kind of just, it always just comes back full circle to me.
Well, I feel like we have just scratched the surface, but we have to wrap it up.
Indeed,
thank you
indeed.
So much for coming in.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to Female Trouble, a Baltimore Sun podcast. You can subscribe and find past episodes on Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Google Play, and everywhere else you get your podcasts. We're also at baltimoresun.com/femaletrouble and on Twitter at FMLTrouble. Our theme song is Dope Girls by Shifty, featuring Baltimore's own TT the Artist. Thanks again, and we'll be back soon with a new episode.